The following program is being brought to you on the Voice America Variety Channel. For more information about our network and to check out additional show hosts and topics of interest, please visit voiceamericavariety.com. The Voice America Talk Radio Network is the worldwide leader in live internet talk radio. Visit voiceamerica.com. The views and ideas expressed on the following program are strictly those of the hosts or guests and do not necessarily reflect the views and ideas held by the Voice America Talk Radio Network, its staff, and management.
This program contains explicit content and subject matter which may be unsuitable for some listeners. Discretion is advised.
Sex Out Loud is brought to you by The Smitten Kitten, non-toxic quality sex toys and supplies. Visit smittenkittenonline.com.
Smart. Sexy. Kinky. Fun.
Welcome to Sex Out Loud with your host, sex educator, author, and filmmaker, Tristan Taramino. It's sex-positive radio like you've never heard before. Tristan talks about sexuality from every angle with leading authors, experts, artists, and icons. From sex education and sexual politics to BDSM and non-monogamy, nothing is off limits. So get ready to open your mind and expand your horizons. This is Sex Out Loud. And now here's your host, Tristan Taramino.
Welcome to Sex Out Loud. Today, I'm celebrating 1 year of Sex Out Loud. That's right, more than 50 episodes of my sex-positive radio show. I can't believe that it's been a year already. I want to say thanks to you, all my listeners, for making this show number one on the entire Voice America Talk Radio Network. That is quite an accomplishment, and it's all thanks to you. Please keep listening, downloading, tweeting, and telling your friends about the show. And subscribe to it on iTunes. Check your subscription if you already have one, because several people reported they were unsubscribed due to some kind of glitch. Of course, I also want to thank my incredible sponsors. They're the ones who make the show possible and free for you. And I encourage you to check them out and support them, because the more successful they are, the more successful we will be. I want to catch you up on a few exciting things in my world. I'm presenting a new talk titled Perverts Are the New Normal at the 35th Annual Guelph Sexuality Conference in Canada on June 6th, 2013. I'm taking the rest of the summer off from travel and public appearances. I like to spend the summer relaxing and recharging, but of course, you can stay in touch with me by listening to the show, finding me on puckerup.com and on Twitter. Are you following me on Twitter? I'm at Tristan Taramino. Today's our first anniversary show, and we have put together clips from shows throughout the year that highlight our fantastic guests, our taboo-busting topics, our inspirational ideas, and the fantastic work that people are doing out in the world. First up, you know her from The Real Housewives of Atlanta as a reality TV star. But Candy Burris is making a name for herself in the world of sex, especially since she came out with her own sex toy line. We had a conversation about parenting and sex education and where young people today are getting information about sex. Let's take a listen.
You have a really unique relationship with your mom, and mm-hmm. I'm wondering how she has influenced your attitudes about sex and sexuality.
Me and my mother, we started having real conversations when I got to, in middle school. And I think it's because she had to have that conversation with me because I was a little fast. So once the realization came that she had to, you know, have these conversations with me and, you know, be open with talking about things, it was like, okay, you know, she didn't really have a choice, you know?
Right, but I would say that lots of girls are sexually active and obviously younger and younger, and their parents are in denial about it.
Well, yeah, until you catch them doing something they shouldn't be doing, or you know, some parents, maybe they're looking at their text messages, or maybe you might see it in their phones, or, you know, whatever, you know, it's ways to find out. You know, a lot of parents, you know, say, oh no, you should give, you know, people, you know, your children their privacy and all of that type of stuff. But I don't know if I believe in complete privacy at that age. And that's because a lot of kids are sneaking around doing stuff that they shouldn't be doing. So you sometimes have to kind of like cross the line of privacy and to know what your kids are doing. Like, I don't even believe in letting my daughter have a password to something that I don't have the password for. Because I'm like, you're not paying for anything. You're not allowed to have something that I can't get into. When you start paying for everything, then you can do that.
Now, do you think—
I know that sounds horrible, but that's just the truth.
Right, but do you think that the way your mom talks about sex with you is going to influence how you talk about sex with your daughter?
Well, I'm very open, so I probably am more open than what my mother would be. For me, my mom, at first, she wasn't so open, like, when I was very small, you know what I mean? So, like, say, for instance, even when it came to starting my period, my friend had told me everything because she had started her period, you know, before I did. So her and her sister had told me everything about, you know, maxi pads and tampons and different things like that. So when it did come on, I didn't even ask my mother for advice or, you know, made her feel like I needed her to do something because I was like, oh, don't worry about it. I got this. Blah, blah, blah. You know what I mean? So In other words, I pretty much learned everything from my peers, you know what I'm saying? And that's not how I feel like kids should learn. I feel like, you know, the parents should talk to kids about stuff early, like when they are 9, 10, 11, 12, because even though I know, you know, sometimes people feel like it's, you know, too early, but it's really not, because nowadays kids are having sex in middle school, you know?
It's true.
So,
and if they don't get the info from you, they are going to get it from their friends. And let's face it, some kids actually don't know what's going on and they'll have wrong information.
Right.
Speaking of where young people get their sex education, one of the most public figures in the sex education media is Dan Savage. I interviewed him about his MTV show, Savage U, and we started talking about some of the most controversial but powerful sex advice that he gave out last season. Now, on two shows in a row, you recommended to two of the students that you were meeting with separately that they should stop having, and they were straight identified students, that they should stop having vaginal intercourse with their partner temporarily to work on some sort of issue. When this happened, they looked utterly shocked. And even your producer and sidekick, Lauren, seemed horrified and scared a little bit. So why can't a lot of straight people grasp what's beyond intercourse?
I don't know. What I loved, though, about that one interaction at University of Central Florida, when I asked that guy if he was having foreplay with his girlfriend, they were having, you know,
and
sexual dysfunction.
And he said they watched movies.
He said, yeah, we watch TV. We watch movies on TV. I'm like, that ain't foreplay. Oh, my God. That's why I told him that he had to learn how to have sex without just defaulting to vaginal immediately. To set the bar a little higher, to learn how her, you know, she's not aroused. Well,
he didn't even say they made out. He didn't even say, like, we make out and I touch her boobs and then we have sex.
I know.
He
like
said
he runs at her across the room with an erection and leaps on her and impales her. And that's why, like, to just challenge him to, like, learn how his female partner's body works, learn what she looks like, what her, you know, vulva and her girl bits look like when she's turned on. I don't think he knows.
No.
And if he got down there with his nose in her crotch instead of his dick, maybe he'll find out.
But there is a sort of a radical subversiveness to your advice, too. I feel like you're teaching straight people how to have queer sex.
You know, I always say, I don't think we got it in the show, because it almost always comes up when I'm speaking at colleges, that there's anything that I would love to see heterosexuals steal from queer culture, from gay culture. I call them the four magic words. What are you into? That every same-sex sexual encounter begins with that question. You know, straight people, they'll get to consent, like, yes, let us have sex. And all communication stops because so much is assumed. And two guys get to, yes, we are going to do it, or two girls, and then they have to have a long conversation. And at that moment, when somebody says, what are you into, both are empowered to rule anything in and anything out. And it blows straight people's minds when I tell them that, you know, there are times when you say, what are you into? And the guy says, well, I'm not into anal. Like, imagine if you said to a girl, what are you into? She said, I'm not into vaginal.
I know, but you know what? Some girls aren't into vaginal intercourse. That's like not the way they get off. And so they should be able to say that.
Maybe just not that night. You know, maybe they're just not in the mood to get plowed. You know, am I allowed to swear on your show?
Yes.
Maybe not in the mood to get fucked. The person who gets fucked usually pays a little higher price physically. A price that's worth paying, but you know, the one who got fucked is going to probably be awake a little longer, tingly. Maybe he's going to have to jump up and use the bathroom a couple of times. And she may want to be intimate and have sex, but she may not want to get fucked. And straight guys, I hear from them all the time complaining that, you know, how hard it is to get girls to say yes. How, you know, they wish they were gay sometimes because it's so easy for gay guys to get laid. One of the reasons it's easier for us to get laid is we don't expect every person that we go to bed with to get fucked.
Right.
That we can do oral, or we can do mutual masturbation or fantasy or frottage or just jerk off together. And we consider all of that stuff sex. And straight guys pout and act like those are lousy-ass consolation prizes. And if they just embrace those as sex and fun, they'd get laid more.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, I think that's part of what you're doing, though, is you're teaching them how to be just a little bit more queer, which I think everyone needs to learn, don't you?
Yes, I think they need to be a little more queer. I also think we need to be a little straighter.
You'll have to listen to that entire episode to find out just what Dan means by that last comment. But we're going to take a little break and hear from our fabulous sponsors. I want to thank the fantastic Sex Positive store, The Smitten Kitten, who was my presenting sponsor all year. They really set the gold standard for customer service, quality products, sex education. Their website is incredible. So you should visit them at their Minneapolis location or online at smittenkittenonline.com. You can use the coupon code Tristan for 20% off your entire order. Coming up, we'll talk to Cindy Gallup and Courtney Trouble about porn. So stay with us. More Sex Out Loud when we return.
The Internet's number one talk station.
Number one talk station.
VoiceAmerica.com.
Hello, Sex Out Loud listeners. This is Jennifer from The Smitten Kitten. Did you know that you can get 20% off your entire purchase at smittenkittenonline.com? All you have to do to get your discount is use the coupon code Tristan. That's T-R-I-S-T-A-N. That means you can get 20% off all Enjoy surgical steel toys, 20% off all Vixen Creation silicone toys, including Tristan's signature butt plugs, and you can also get all of Tristan's DVDs, the entire Vivid Ed series she did, and the Chemistry series for 20% off. Too. Sex Out Loud listeners can get 20% off of everything at smittenkittenonline.com. Smitten Kitten specializes in high-quality sex toys and supplies. We're well-known for having an amazing selection of toys made of silicone and other body-safe materials. Shopping on our website is easy. You can chat online with a Smitten Kitten sex educator, or you can call us anytime at 888-751-0523. Everything is 20% off at smittenkittenonline.com when you use coupon code Tristan at the checkout.
Ready to take your sex life to the next level? Let Tristan Taramino's award-winning expert guide sex education series help. Each DVD is packed with honest information, explicit techniques, scorching sex scenes, authentic chemistry, and real female orgasms. Go to puckerup.com and use coupon code SEXOUTLOUD for 25% off your order.
You're tuned in to Sex Out Loud with your host, Tristan Taramino. We want to hear from you. If you have a question or comment, please send an email to Tristan@puckerup.com. That's Tristan@puckerup.com. Now back to the show.
Welcome back to Sex Out Loud. Today is our first anniversary show, and we are catching up on some of the shows of the past year with the movers and shakers in the sex world. Someone who is definitely making a name for herself by really shaking up the porn industry is Cindy Gallup, who has launched her latest venture, Make Love, Not Porn. And I talked to her about how it differs from other websites and how the economic model is different. And let's talk a little bit about the economic model, because it is unique, at least in terms of the adult industry. It's both cheap and you're doing an interesting revenue share.
Yeah. So I designed the business model for my startups around my own personal philosophies and beliefs. I believe that everybody should realize the value of what they create. I believe that particularly at a time when so many things are moving to free online. And I also believe it because my background is in theater and advertising, two industries where ideas and creativity are massively undervalued, even often by the creators themselves. I believe that if you create something that gives people pleasure, you should see a financial return on it. And the more people you give more pleasure to, the greater that financial return should be. And so that's why, you know, we operate a model where we do actually charge you to submit your real-world sex videos to Make Love Not Porn TV. It's a small token nominal fee. It's $5 per submission. We explain that's a curation fee. It's non-refundable whether or not we publish your content. Actually, that $5 is there to act as a form of quality control, to screen out, you know, spammers, trolls, crap. You know, if you're gonna pay $5, you will at least, we hope, be, you know, submitting something that is the kind of thing we're looking for. Then we charge you essentially to rent. So when you click on the video you want to watch, you pay $5, and you can then view it as many times as you like during a 3-week time period. And obviously during that time, you can share it with somebody in your physical vicinity. So, you know, one half of a couple can rent and share it with both. And then we revenue share. We give you, the contributor, 50% of the revenue that your MakeLoveNotPorn.tv video generates, net a small amount to cover hosting, bandwidth, and transaction fees. And that really is about, you know, we hope that over time, you know, we will scale and get bigger. And, you know, ultimately, if you are having wonderful real-world sex that people are enjoying, you will have the chance to really benefit from that financially. I should just say that we are enormously grateful to our initial Make Love Not Porn stars, and the contributors who are there at the moment are there because they wholeheartedly believe in and support our social mission. They too want there to be a greater openness and honesty in the world around sex. And so while there obviously is a financial incentive, I can tell you that, you know, for the people there at the moment, it is very much the secondary consideration to wanting to support us at this very early stage in our life cycle.
That's fantastic. And how did you find your Make Love Not Porn stars?
This is the interesting thing. So, you know, I and Sarah have spent quite a bit of time over the past year while we've been building the platform, essentially asking complete strangers to video themselves having real-world sex with us. So whenever I talked about Make Love Not Porn TV, I would always end the conversation, as I still do, by asking the question, so would you be interested in contributing content? 99.9% of the time, the answer is yes. To the extent that I have literally had to force my facial features to remain immobile because I want to go, what? We've been discovering that the desire to do this lies a lot closer to the surface in many more people than you would ever have thought. And given an excuse, you know, given the social values and the social mission, actually, people jump at the chance.
That's fantastic. It's shocking because I think that there still are implications, obviously, for putting a video of you having sex online. So I'm amazed, but perhaps it's the circles in which you run.
What do you know, Tristan? I think it's more, while we're a platform for everybody, we focus contributor-wise on Generation Y, millennials, 18 to 30-year-olds. And, you know, this is the generation, first of all, that's grown up video sharing everything. Mm-hmm. So once upon a time, your marriage proposal used to be an extremely intimate, private thing just for the two of you. You would not have dreamed of videoing your marriage proposal and posting it on Facebook. Even less would you have dreamed of constructing an entire flash mob event around it, posting it on YouTube and hoping for millions of views. So times have changed, and you know, video sharing, pretty much everything you do these days is much more common. And then, you know, what I say to people also is think about all of those celebrations of relationships that crop up currently on your Facebook timeline. Think about those engagement announcements, wedding photos, lovey-dovey, coupley things. All we're doing is providing a platform to celebrate that last dimension of human relationships that nobody else will let you.
And certainly not Facebook or TwitPic or, I mean, you know, I mean, I think that actually all of that is censored.
Yeah. Well, do you know, in the past couple of months, I've had several journalists call me up for comments on the same sort of theme. And the conversation usually goes, Cindy, I'm writing a story about the explosion of porn on, fill in the blank here, Tumblr, Instagram, Facebook. Mm-hmm. Do you think this is a problem that happens, you know, whenever a social media network gets to a certain size, and what do you think they should do about it? And I have two responses for that. My first is that I think it's a problem, they think it's a problem, because it's a tribute to any social media community when your users feel comfortable enough to actually be able to self-identify and self-express their sexuality. And by the way, you know, when Tumblr, Instagram, Facebook talk about porn, they are lumping in anything involving nudity, anything mm-hmm. involving any, you know, form of sexual self-expression whatsoever. So A, I think it's a problem, they think it's a problem. And then B, I love they think it's a problem because I go, come on over here. Make Love Not Porn on TV is for all the people who get kicked off Tumblr and Instagram.
Get kicked off Facebook for one random photo.
Exactly. So because, you know, sex is personality. Who we are sexually is as much part of how we self-identify and self-express as any other talent, skill, or trait we currently showcase on Facebook, Tumblr, Instagram. And, you know, while my team and I are setting out on a monumental, you know, path with Make Love Not Porn, because ultimately, we would like to make real-world sex socially acceptable and therefore just as socially shareable and discussable as anything else we currently share in social media. But, you know, the ultimate corollary of success, if one day we actually manage to achieve that, would be that nobody should ever need to feel embarrassed or ashamed again about having a naked photo or a sex tape of them posted on the internet, because it's simply a natural part of who we all are.
That was a really powerful message from Cindy Gallup, and it's a show that we got a lot of feedback from you, our listeners, about. I liked how she talked about how we need to make this cultural shift about what it means to have a naked picture of ourselves out there in the world, which ties in nicely with the next person we're going to hear from, queer porn icon Courtney Trouble, who has put her own body on the line in her pornography and activism.
You're also a really outspoken advocate of fat positive porn or body positive porn, I would say. And I'm wondering, how did you come to a place where you could embrace your own size, your own body, and not just embrace it, but celebrate it and get naked on camera?
Mm-hmm. It was just kind of one of those things where I really wanted to do the end result. I really wanted to celebrate myself. I really wanted to perform. I really wanted to be a star. I really wanted to fuck on film. And I just had to convince myself that I wasn't too fat to do that, you know, because in my head, when I was 18 years old, you know, it's like, you're too fat to be in porn. You're too fat to be naked in front of the person that you have a crush on. You're too fat to be a fashion model. You'll never do those things unless you lose weight. And I just, you know, at some point you just realize I'm wasting so much time. I'm wasting so much of my life waiting or fretting or worrying about something when I could be doing all that stuff right now. Anyways, regardless of where my body goes, and I have lost tons of weight. I have gained tons of weight. And throughout that all, I'm still living my life. And that's what it boils down to for me. My feminist ideals are definitely very pervasive as far as body positivity go, because I see all of this fat shaming and fat hatred as a way of sort of forcing ourselves and forcing each other to obey some mystical standard of what, quote unquote, women should be or men should be. And for me, all of that stuff is just ways to keep us down, you know? It's sort of like the 1%, 99% type of thing. 1%, you know, the quote unquote fat cats can do whatever the heck they want. And the rest of us have to strive our whole lives to fit into some ideal instead of just putting it down and living our lives.
And do you feel like you get support from your fellow queer pornographers, the community that you work in, for showing all this body diversity in your films?
I certainly get support. Tremendous support from my fans. The industry related community that I have directly around me is very small, and they're my friends and they're my fans. So they're definitely included in part of that. For instance, I work for Crash Pad Series as a performer. They, you know, like when I walk into that set, I know that I'm going to be celebrated, and not because I'm fat or because I'm not fat, but because I'm me and I'm being me. And that's sort of how my world works. I still have yet to have gotten a job in the LA porn world whatsoever, mainly because
mainstream adult industry.
Yeah. You know, because I'm too small for BBW porn. And
which is big, beautiful,
big,
women,
beautiful
porn.
Women porn. Yes.
You're too small. You're too small for big.
I'm too small for big, and I'm too big for normal. So that's sort of my conundrum. And in the meantime, I'm just going to keep doing what I do and live my life. You know, if they want me, they'll find me, you know, and that's not something that I need to beat myself up over. And I think we're all so busy judging ourselves and comparing ourselves to other people that we don't get to challenge ourselves to move beyond that and make art or start a successful porn site or whatever it is, you know.
And do you consider yourself a role model?
I'm only so graciously rewarded when people call me that.
Well, because I think you're putting, you know, you're modeling a kind of confidence, a kind of sexuality.
Yeah.
You know, I think that our society stigmatizes porn performers to say, in fact, they're the opposite. Don't grow up and be like them.
Yeah.
But on the other hand, you're putting a message out there that I think lots of women can relate to, which is I'm sexy at any size.
Yeah, absolutely. And that I'm not letting my size stop me from doing what I want to do right now. I don't even necessarily think that it's about sexiness per se. I always think that the, like, I can be sexy too is sort of that first step towards liberation, because that's so often what we are trapped and like trapped behind is our sexuality.
We're told our value is in how sexy or not
is
sexy
in
we
sex
are.
We are, yes. Yeah. You know, and to take, so that's a great first step. If I can be a role model to younger people or older people, to just like put that down and do what you want to do. For me, it was be sexy in public. For other people, it might be something else.
That was just a piece of my conversation, which I had live in San Francisco with Courtney Trouble. We're going to take another break. Coming up, we will hear from two legends, Nina Hartley and Kate Bornstein. But first, let's hear from our fabulous sponsors, including Astroglide. Astroglide has been supportive of my work for many, many years. They've sponsored my college tours where I've given out
probably thousands of Astroglide lube samples to college kids everywhere. If you want a free sample of Astroglide, you can go to astroglide.com. Stay with us. More Sex Out Loud after the break.
Stimulating talk
gets those synapses in the brain firing really fast.
All the time.
The number one internet talk station where your opinion counts. VoiceAmerica.com.
Looking to add something fun and different to your sexual experiences? Then try Astroglide X, premium silicone personal lubricant. Astroglide X contains a unique blend of high-quality silicones that provide a silky smooth experience unlike any other. Astroglide X is also waterproof and perfect for water play. Not only does Astroglide X last longer than all water-based products and is hypoallergenic and latex safe, it's even great for massage. For more information and a free sample, visit astroglide.com.
This is Jennifer Pritchett from The Smitten Kitten. We're huge Tristan Taramino fans, just like you, and we're so proud to be the presenting sponsor for Sex Out Loud. If you're not already familiar with Smitten Kitten, here's the deal. We're an education-based sex toys and supplies retailer. We sell high-quality, non-toxic, and artist-made sex toys, organic lubes, and all kinds of kinky stuff, including hard-to-find vegan options. We cater to an incredibly diverse clientele and specialize in helping you find new sexual interests, expand your sexual skill sets, and even troubleshoot sexual issues with you. We are here to help you feel confident and sexy. We spend a ton of time and energy curating our selection of products to make sure we have the best selection, be it silicone dildos, pegging and strap-on equipment, vibrators, or ethically made porn. Our mission is to make sex-positive culture accessible to everyone. Don't miss our free streaming explicit educational videos, many of which were directed by Tristan herself, on our website, smittenkittenonline.com. Get inspired by Tristan's amazing show, Sex Out Loud, and then visit us online at our Minneapolis location.
Ready to take your sex life to the next level? Let Tristan Taramino's award-winning expert guide sex education series help. Each DVD is packed with honest information, explicit techniques, scorching sex scenes, authentic chemistry, and real female orgasms. Go to puckerup.com and use coupon code SEXOUTLOUD for 25% off your order.
You're tuned in to Sex Out Loud with your host, Tristan Taramino. We want to hear from you. If you have a question or comment, please send an email to Tristan at puckerup.com. That's Tristan at puckerup.com. Now back to the show.
Welcome back to Sex Out Loud. Today, we're celebrating 1 year of Sex Positive Radio, and I have picked some of my favorite shows from the past year to highlight for you. Nina Hartley is known for being one of the world's best-loved porn stars, but she's also an incredible activist for non-traditional sex and relationships. Here, she talks about her path to embracing non-monogamy and bisexuality.
I grew up in Berkeley, California in the 60s and 70s with parents who were married and had no other partners. But I didn't understand, I just got from the social, and didn't have religious upbringing, but I got from the society that, you know, there's one for every person. You only get to have one. And, you know, adultery is bad, whatever adultery was, but you only get to have one. There is the one. And I just never understood that because I never dreamt of him. I always dreamt of them, even before I knew what him was supposed to be. I understood I was a bisexual person by the time I was 13 or 14, and I understood that I was a voyeur at about the same time and an exhibitionist, a long word. But I had access to information because of where and when I grew up. So I always knew that I wasn't like other kids, but I didn't have the term non-monogamous. But don't forget, in the 70s, when I was coming of age, there was the experimentation in the so-called open marriage, in key parties, in the book, The Herod Experiment. So the idea of non-traditional sexual expression was out there in the media. I didn't know how to do it myself, but I knew that I wasn't like other people. And so And I ended up, I had a couple boyfriends, and it always upset them that I would sleep with them and I wanted other people too. I was having dreams of threesomes since junior high school, before I even knew that you had these kinds of things. Like, oh, yeah, one of each. I want one of each. Yeah, at the same time. That'd be cool. Fast forward to when I'm 21, my first threesome was a disaster of the highest order. It was so bad. It ended early because my jealousy just jumped out at me. And so I didn't understand, you know, golly, what's wrong with me? So I tried for many years to be monogamous, and I failed miserably. I have no monogamous feelings. I don't have monogamous fantasies. And I could just never understand, why does my desire bother other people so much? What's the problem? I don't dislike you. I like you and I like them. Big problem. And so I was in a relationship for 20 years with two people, a couple that are still together, actually. And I thought, this is great. But I didn't know that just because we're all non-monogamous doesn't mean it's going to be a good relationship. Just because two people are gay doesn't mean they're right for each other. And just because three people are non-monogamous doesn't mean they're right for each other. So I tell people, I broke up after 20 years, not because there were three of us, but because there were the wrong two people.
Nina talks about the messages we get from society and how she really challenged those, the ones she heard growing up. And someone who has certainly challenged her share of societal norms is author and gender theorist Kate Bornstein. When I asked Kate about growing old gracefully, she traced it back to her time when she was a consensual BDSM slave. Let's take a listen.
It seems like you have aged quite gracefully.
Sorry.
And so I want to talk a little bit about aging as a trans person and feeling sexy, because at least what you exude is still a kind of sexiness that we often don't see represented in the media, you know, as someone over 60. So do you still feel sexy, and how does it feel to be sexy but older?
Sexy is what I've always wanted to feel. I've always wanted to feel like a sexy girl. I never thought it was possible. And it only really became possible for me, maybe only really started to believe it 15 years ago, maybe, during that period of my slavery. People would call me, you know, sexy or beautiful. And when you're a slave, you can't say no. You have to say thank you, ma'am. And so I got into practice of saying thank you. There's an interesting thing with trans people, and I believe this happens with people who make any major life transition. I am, by all reasonable, legal, medical facts, a 64-year-old man. This is it. Right? And I went through my gender reassignment surgery 26 years ago. So what does that make me? I'm a 26-year-old young woman. So I have that vitality that I draw on, because the world is still so new to me in that way. And in terms of old age, there are times I feel really, really, really old. And there's one way of looking at old age, which is called generatively. This is where you go, okay, I've lived a full life. What can I do to give back? What can I do to make it easier for some other folks? And that's the path I've chosen. And if that keeps me young and sexy in your eyes, bam, I'm a winner.
Kate Bornstein is a winner. She's given so much to so many people. After that episode aired, Kate announced that she is fighting cancer. And there was a tremendous outpouring of support from all around the world. So I just want to say, we continue to love and adore you, Kate, and wish you well in your fight against cancer. And we want you to stick around for a lot longer. We're going to take a commercial break and hear from our sponsors, including WeVibe. WeVibe is one of these sex toy companies that really changed the sex toy industry, which is hard to do. Lots of sex toy companies kind of replicate and repeat what other people are doing. But when WeVibe came along, they really shifted things. They made a product unlike any other product out there. And now they have a whole family of products. You should check out the latest, the WeVibe 3, at we-vibe.com. Stay with us. Coming up, we've got Ignacio Rivera and Jack Halberstam. More Sex Out Loud when we return.
Streaming live, the leader in internet talk radio, VoiceAmerica.com.
Turn off the TV and pick up the remote control that is sure to please. Worn while making love, the WeVibe 3 features whisper quiet motors that will keep you anything but quiet. We can't help it if the rechargeable battery lasts longer than you do. Learn more about the world's number one vibrator for couples at WeVibe.com. WeVibe, share the pleasure.
Hello, Sex Out Loud listeners. This is Jennifer from the Smitten Kitten. Did you know that you can get 20% off your entire purchase at smittenkittenonline.com? All you have to do to get your discount is use the coupon code TRISTAN. That's T-R-I-S-T-A-N. That means you can get 20% off all Enjoy surgical steel toys, 20% off all Vixen Creation silicone toys, including Tristan's signature butt plugs, and you can also get all of Tristan's DVDs, the entire Vivid Ed series she did, and the Chemistry series for 20% off. Too. Sex Out Loud listeners can get 20% off of everything at smittenkittenonline.com. Smitten Kitten specializes in high-quality sex toys and supplies. We're well known for having an amazing selection of toys made of silicone and other body-safe materials. Shopping on our website is easy. You can chat online with a Smitten Kitten sex educator, or you can call us anytime at 888-751-0523. Everything is 20% off at smittenkittenonline.com when you use coupon code TRISTAN at the checkout.
Ready to take your sex life to the next level? Let Tristan Taramino's award-winning expert guide sex education series help. Each DVD is packed with honest information, explicit techniques, scorching sex scenes, authentic chemistry, and real female orgasms. Go to puckerup.com and use coupon code SEXOUTLOUD for 25% off your order.
You're tuned in to Sex Out Loud with your host, Tristan Taramino. We want to hear from you. If you have a question or comment, please send an email to Tristan at puckerup.com. That's Tristan at puckerup.com. Now back to the show.
Welcome back to Sex Out Loud. Today, we are featuring some of the most popular and talked about guests from the past year and little clips of their interviews to remind you why they were so fantastic. Next up is performer, writer, and activist Ignacio Rivera, who talked to me about their own journey to gender fluidity, their identity, and why they use the pronoun they.
Let's start with gender. Tell me about your gender.
Oh, that's so complex. I always tell the story when I perform and I say, I was heterosexual for many years and then I was bisexual for about a month. And then I was a lesbian, then a dyke, then queer, then trans. So sexual orientation and gender all kind of like flow and it's very fluid for me. And I've just really... search that part of me, just different aspects of me. Right now, I identify, and I like to say right now, I identify as queer, two-spirit. And under that, it's like under the trans umbrella, there's two-spirit, there's genderqueer, gender fluid. I usually say I'm a transformer, I'm more than meets the eye. Once you think you got me pegged, I'll fuck your mind up. So it's pretty fluid, and I like that. I don't like to be set. I don't like my gender to be set in stone because I don't think gender is set in stone. For some people, it's really comfortable at one point. But for me, I just kind of navigate and flow through it. Two-spirit identity is more closely related to my Taino culture, background. It's more about indigenous identity. And it has to do with both gender and sexual orientation. So Two-Spirit is an identity that I've been claiming most recently, and I'm really happy about and proud of, because that's a huge part of who I am culturally.
And I know you now, and I've known you for several years, so I see that you occupy this sort of fluid gender space. But what do you feel like people misunderstand about your gender?
I think because we have ideas about what a man is supposed to be and what a woman is supposed to be, and we don't see the gray area or the areas outside of that, people put me in these nice little boxes all the time. So when I tell people that I'm trans, and I know a lot of people being very respectful, you know, when I say I'm trans, they automatically go to he pronouns, and they treat me in a way that they think a man needs to be treated. You know, it's not like they're being fucked up, but they're subscribing to this rigid idea of what masculinity or man is. And half the time I'm saying, I don't even know what the hell masculinity or femininity is. I have no idea. You know, it's what society has kind of shaped. So it's mostly like people kind of deciding what I am, because it makes people very uncomfortable when they know about my fluidity, because I think it more reflects on them and what their connection to me says about them. When people are attracted to me, it really fucks them up because it screws with what they know about their own sexuality. And I am attracted to a whole slew of people. Although I navigate towards trans guys and trans women and just, you know, gender fuckers, but I'm definitely attracted to a whole slew of folks. So I think who I am really pushes buttons for people and who they are. So that's usually the issue.
And I like that idea that you feel comfortable in your gender as it is, but it sort of raises anxieties for other people,
yes.
Right? It
yeah.
like freaks other people out,
yeah.
Because then they have to sort of question, wait, am I attracted to, who am I attracted to? What do I?
Right.
But do you feel a sense of belonging and support around you? Or do you ever feel a pressure to transition, to pick one or the other?
Yes.
To
yes.
stay where they assigned you at birth, or to go and transition to be male? Do you feel that pressure?
I think in the beginning I felt more pressure when I started saying I am trans. I asked people to use both she and he interchangeably. And when I say interchangeably, like in the same sentence, you know, like know how to do that. People had a really hard time doing that. So they always chose she. And so for 2 years, when I first came out, I decided that I was going to use male pronouns, he, I should say, because I felt like my trans identity was invisible. So I think that right there just showed how that kind of pushed me to use a pronoun that I really wasn't fully and wholly comfortable with, because I wanted to be seen as trans. And then after those 2 years, I was like, you know, she doesn't sit well with me. He doesn't really sit well with me. And when I, you know, had a friend that used they, it was like the heavens opened up and I was like, this is my pronoun. I love it because it doesn't indicate anything. And that's also what makes people a little uncomfortable, you know, so it doesn't indicate shit about me. And I like that because it's always changing, you know, and not to say someone who identifies or uses he or she can't change either, because, of course, it's fluid. And I believe in that. But and yeah, sometimes when I say I'm trans, you know, it's that whole thing. It's you don't look trans enough. What does that mean? You know, because I don't want to have surgery, and I've dabbled with the idea of testosterone, but it scares the shit out of me. So, you know, I have these constant conversations with myself and my chosen family around what does it mean to be trans, and do I need to do this? Sometimes I look in the mirror and I say, God, I hate my hips. I wish I didn't have hips for this particular outfit that I want to wear, you know, I'm starting to make a joke about my chest now. It's like my lovely lady lump. So they're just, you know, they're just showing a little too much right now. And I wish that they couldn't. So I wish that I could. I wish that sometimes my body was like Play-Doh, that I could mold it the way I wanted to for that day and always come back to it. You know, I just wish that could happen, but since I can't, but I think society definitely does pressure me into binding or not binding, you know. I bind sometimes, other times I don't. And when I don't, well, it's like a really big head fuck for me, because I'm like, do people see me? I look like a woman right now. No one's going to know that I'm trans, you know. And so I struggle with that, but I have to live within my own, I have to live within my own truth. And my truth is that I am fluid, and that sometimes I'm going to bind and it's going to look like I don't have tits. And other times you're going to see tits. And that's the nature of me, and I have to live my truth.
Picking up on this notion of gender and sex binaries, one of my favorite interviews of the entire year was with professor and queer cultural critic Jack Halberstam, talking about Jack's newest book, Gaga Feminism: Sex, Gender, and the End of Normal. Jack had some really interesting insights in that interview. And one of the things I loved was what Jack has to say about what kids can teach us about gender.
So can we talk about your gender for a moment?
Let's do it.
How do you identify your gender? How do you describe your gender? What do you call your gender?
You know, I am a kind of in between at this point. And that's a childhood that one of my friend's kids calls us in between us, in the sense that many of my peers have transitioned from a place of cross-identification, have transitioned and become men. And I think there's something in me that is deeply disidentified with men that I would call feminism, that makes me cling on to butch personhood longer than other people maybe would think was, you know, politic. I get that the butch is a category that is shrinking by the day, but that's still where you'll find me. Now, what's interesting nowadays is because there is such a visible F2M transgender community, I become less and less readable in some sense because there isn't a way of placing me.
By queer people.
By queer people.
Wouldn't you say that? Okay. Because I find that interesting that straight people, if they want to see male and not really listen or look, they'll just see male. But queer people, then it's confusing to them.
It's confusing. And I do have some dear friends recently who did transition that made me think, oh my God, am I going to be the last butch standing here? But at the same time, a lot of people call me he and Jack. And the thing that gives me away, as and radio is perfect for this, is my voice. I have kind of a high voice. And so, and I have what somebody described as a fluty voice. So it's a tricky maneuver for me. I can pass okay sometimes.
Without talking.
But I'm a talker. So I don't get very far without talking, you know. And so I'm very much an in-betweener. At work recently, people have started calling me Jack, and my partner calls me he. And I just don't correct anyone. I don't correct anyone. People call me he, they call me she. What I really dislike is when I'm called ma'am or when my partner and I are called ladies.
Oh, love that at the restaurant. Yep. Love that. I get that too. And I'm who are you? I don't even identify as a lady. I'm offended by lady.
Can we just say that on the air that like, people, you need to stop calling two differently gendered people lady.
But I also want to say that I understand people in service professions wanting to be polite and respectful.
Right.
And I'm totally down with that, but we need another way to do it.
Well, look, then the lesson there then is that manners require gender, and that's really a problem. So this is why we need these new languages, because people deserve to be addressed in ways that are suitable to who they are in the world and in their bodies. And we are running out of words, people. We are running out of language. So Gaga Feminism uses that term Gaga for all the words that we don't yet have. And this may be just the first book in a series. I'm thinking of doing Gaga Feminism too, because I think that the narrative of gender and sexuality that I'm tracing is unfolding as we speak.
Right.
You know, and you're part of that, and Kate Bornstein's part of that, and all kinds of people are contributing to a new classification system that is vernacular rather than expert.
And I'm wondering if you can tell this great story that you tell in the book about your partner's son, who you are co-parenting, asking you if you have a penis.
Right. So he was 6 or 7 at the time, and he's a really cute little boy who doesn't have an annoying masculinity. He has a very cute masculinity. And he took to me as a boy girl very quickly characterized me as masculine and understood me as somebody who was in between. But one day we were walking home and he said that he had a very important question to ask me. And as I say in the book, usually that was a lead in to questions about animals, turtles, octopuses, octopi, whatever. And that day he just immediately launched into, do you have a penis? And it was interesting because he didn't just say, do you have a penis, Jack? He said, do you have a penis or? And then he realized he wouldn't know what to call the girl thing, right? Mm. So he just stopped. Do you have a penis or? And at that point, his sister, who's younger but sort of more knowing than he is, she just jumped in and said, I first of all said, I don't have a penis. I have what girl said. She jumps in and said, of course he doesn't have a penis. He's not a boy. He's a boy girl. So, but what was instructive to me about the interaction was that neither one of them required that I have a penis in order for them to continue thinking about me as male or masculine or boy or boy girlish. And it didn't disrupt their sense of pronouns. So from mm-hmm. that little interaction, what I took from it was kids have a lot of flexibility around gender that adults need to learn again. Because mm-hmm. we all had that, but we got trained out of a flexible relationship to people's genders because yes. it wasn't considered socially polite.
That interview with Jack really summarizes what I'm trying to do. Changing the conversation about what is polite, what we can and can't talk about, having the discussions that other people aren't having, that's what Sex Out Loud is all about. Thank you for listening to this special one-year anniversary episode. You can find out more about these past guests, as well as future shows, at sexoutloudradio.com. Click on the link for episode resources. You can also follow us on Twitter at Sex Out Loud Radio, where we always live tweet our shows and would love to interact with you. I want to thank everyone who makes this show possible, including executive producer Karen Dana, associate producer Raymond Johnson, segment producer and editor Colton, announcer Cooper Beckett from Life on the Swing Set, Matt, my engineer, and everyone at Voice America. If you want to hear the shows we excerpted today in their entirety, you can listen on demand or download the MP3 by going to voiceamerica.com and searching for Sex Out Loud. You can also search for the guest's name. You can subscribe to Sex Out Loud as a podcast on iTunes, and then you will never miss an episode. Tune in next Friday at 5 p.m. Pacific, 8 p.m. Eastern, when my guest will be feminist pornographer Erica Lust, joining us from Barcelona. And in the coming weeks, I'll be talking to sex educator Francisco Ramirez, parenting blogger Ariel Clark, sex-positive astrologer Eric Francis, Tantus sex toy company president Metis Black, and alt-porn punk princess Joanna Angel. Until then, I encourage you to keep the discussion going on Facebook.com/AskTristan, on Twitter at SexOutLoudRadio, and in your own life. Take some time to talk about sex out loud.
That's a wrap on today's show. Go to VoiceAmerica.com to listen to this and other episodes on demand or as podcasts. And make sure you come back next Friday night at 8 p.m. Eastern, 5 Pacific, for Sex Out Loud with Tristan Taramino on Voice America Variety. Sex Out Loud is brought to you by The Smitten Kitten, non-toxic quality sex toys and supplies. Visit smittenkittenonline.com.